is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
There's a lot more into this than I ever thought. It's just not, oh, kids are just going to show up. I guess you don't realize that, oh, I got to go get these kids to get here. And you got to be a little different. You know, you need to be able to work at this and make sure these kids, you can build a relationship real quick in a couple of months.
Todd McGinnis was named the fourth head coach ever in the history of the Case Western Reserve University men's basketball team on July 16th, 2016. He is the owner of a 143-118 record over his 10 seasons as a collegiate head coach. McGinnis, a Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania native, joined the Spartans after spending the previous 7 years as the head coach of Hartwick College in Oneonta, New York. Todd previously served a stint as the assistant coach of the Case Western Reserve University varsity program and head coach of the junior varsity squad from 2006 to 2009. Prior to his time as an assistant at Case Western, McGinnis was an assistant coach at both Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York from 2004 to 2006 and at Hartwick from 2003 to 2004. McGinnis played collegiately at Bethany College in Bethany, West Virginia, where he received his bachelor's degree in physical education in 2002. While at Bethany, he was a 3-year starter and a 2-year co-captain, leading the Bison to 2 President's Athletic Conference championships and an NCAA appearance in 2002. After you're done listening to this episode with Todd McGinnis, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. The Hoopheads Pod can be found on all the major podcast apps. Let a friend or coaching colleague know about the show so we can continue to grow the great game of basketball. Be prepared to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Todd McGinnis, men's head basketball coach at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Case Western Reserve University here in Cleveland, Todd McGinnis. Todd, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on, get a chance to dig into your background story, learn a little bit about what you're building down there at Case Western Reserve in downtown Cleveland. Todd, talk to us a little bit about how you got into the game of basketball when you were a kid.
Yeah, I played a lot of sports growing up. I played basketball, I played soccer, I golfed, I played baseball. I didn't really play football. I went to a parochial school until 8th grade. I grew up outside the Pittsburgh area, and so I went to parochial school, went to a lot of basketball camps, baseball, golf, you know, everything like that. And, you know, basketball was the parochial schools in Pittsburgh. It was really, you know, really high level basketball growing up. And my father was my coach, and we, you know, I enjoyed it. I grew to be a little bit taller than everyone else. And, you know, so I was able to decide that maybe this is for me. And so I kept playing golf and high school. I went to Gateway High School outside Pittsburgh. You know, my brother is 2 years older than me, and he was a better probably athlete than I was growing up, and always trying to beat him. And then, you know, he was better at me in baseball, and then I remember, you know, beating him in basketball. So I was like, oh, okay, there's a chance that I might be all right at this. And I was able to go and you know, play. I think I played in ninth grade. I played on the ninth grade team, and then as a sophomore I was able to move up to the varsity, and we were a big school in Pennsylvania, and you know, I had great experiences, and you know, kept playing golf, kept playing baseball, but just didn't like, you know, those sports as much. I think I probably was a better baseball player than I was basketball. I just got bored with playing baseball at times, and so I decided, okay, I'm gonna maybe try to play in college and basketball. So I played a lot as a sophomore. I think I started every game in my high school career that I was on the varsity, which, you know, isn't easy to do as a sophomore, junior, and senior. And, you know, we had good teams. We weren't great, but, you know, I was actually, when I'm about 6'3", 6'4", I don't even know how tall I am anymore. I think I've actually shrunk a little bit. And when I was, you know, so as like a sophomore, I was like an inside player because I was a little bit, you know, I don't know why, but I had good footwork around the basket. And then as a junior and senior, I was like, well, if I'm going to play at the next level or learn, you know, try to play the number, I need to play on the wing. And, you know, so then I started playing on the wing and working on my shot a little bit more and, you know, just being able to handle the ball. And, you know, so that's my like high school. And then I went to, I was recruited by a few schools as kind of a couple scholarship interests, but I don't I wasn't that kind of level. I wasn't a good enough athlete. I don't, looking back on it now, maybe back then I thought I could play at that level, but like looking back on it, how our recruiting is and everything now, I wasn't a good enough athlete. And the crazy thing, when I played, there wasn't really AAU. I'm not the oldest out there, but I graduated high school in 98, and there was no AAU at that point, really. And so it was really, I remember going to Metro Index basketball camps and trying to be recruited that way in a lot of high school team camps and summer league, and it really wasn't any, you know, the recruitment was a lot different than it is now. And, you know, I looked at a bunch of schools and I decided to go to Bethany College in West Virginia. I remember one of the reasons I went is I went and watched them play and they were just god awful. They were 2-23 and I was like, "Ooh, I can play right away here."
There you go. There's some minutes for me.
Yeah. And, nice. And they had phys ed and health, and you know, that's what I thought. I thought I wanted to be communication, stuff like that. And I got there, sports management, all trying to figure it out. Then I went into phys ed and health, and you know, luckily I chose it because, you know, I started, I think, half my games in my freshman year. Then my sophomore, junior, I started pretty much every game there. Then I got hurt going into my senior, broke my hand and playing pickup. And I, didn't start as a senior, but we had great experience. We were 5-20 as a freshman, and sophomore, we weren't great. Junior year, we ended up being real good and almost made the NCAA tournament. Senior year, we made the NCAA tournament, and actually we lost, in the second round of NCAA tournament to Otterbein, who ended up going on with Jeff Gibbs that year and winning the national title. So, you know, I think it might be the last time an Ohio team's won a national title in basketball, Division III-wise. So, so that was, you know, there. And I was student teaching at the time and, you know, all that. So I think that's where I decided maybe I want to coach We had good teams. We had a couple of real good players. Actually, the best player I played with was from Girard, Ohio here. He was the all-time leading scorer at Bethany. He was a really, really good player. So I'm hoping, you know, I can find someone like that here at Case. So is that good, or you want me to keep going?
No, that's good. I want to circle back and ask you two things. One, okay. I'm always fascinated by the multi-sport background and how you felt that impacted you, and then what you look at in terms of from a coaching standpoint and recruiting standpoint, how do you feel about multi-sport athletes? Obviously, multi-sport athletes don't really exist necessarily too often in college, but if you're looking at a kid that you're recruiting, or just think about your own experience, how would you characterize your experience as a multi-sport athlete, and then how that maybe impacts when you're looking at a guy to bring into to Case or wherever you're coaching at the time?
It's interesting because I don't think I even knew better growing up. I just think that's what my family life was like. And I think that's what all my friends did, is play everything. And so I just was like, okay, this is a chance I can play golf. I actually played golf in college as well. And, so I think it was just what I was used to doing. And, you know, I don't know if I think I would have got bored with the game of basketball if I started playing at like 14. That's all I played. I think I really would have got bored of it. And, you know, I just think that maybe I got bored of baseball playing that, and maybe I played that a lot more growing up. And, you know, I like kids that, you know, recruits that play multi-sport. I think the best recruit we have coming this year, he's actually from Coldwater, Ohio, and he was the state, they lost in the state championship game in baseball, and he was the starting pitcher. So, you know, and he played stuff. So I think we kind of look for it, because I don't want guys to get, you know, I like guys when they get here to still be fresh and not just beaten down by playing basketball every single day and all the AAU, all this stuff. I like guys to be, when they get here, oh, okay, I haven't been, you know, this is good. I can actually focus on this and, you know, focus on my studies. And, you know, so we look at it, look for it. I think it's, you know, I recommend it. When guys ask me, hey, going into my senior year, I might not play this. I'm like, why wouldn't you? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah, like keep playing. Like if you can play football and not get hurt, or, you know, you can play baseball, or you can golf or lacrosse or whatever, I think go do it. It's, you know, you probably enjoy it. And it might be the last time you really, you know, like going to play a sport that you're not going to concentrate to have. Maybe the last time you have a lot of fun playing something, because you're not really worried about it anymore. So, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that too often we get caught up, you know, nowadays kids get caught up in, I got to specialize at such a young age. And you see kids that are 10, 11 years old that are already focused on one thing, and not just basketball. It could be soccer, it could be baseball, whatever. And they're playing 100 games a year, and they're going to a trainer, and they're doing all this stuff. And then when it comes time for them to get to high school, a lot of times, like you described, they're burned out and they don't want to play that sport anymore because they've done it so often, so much, and it's such a high degree of seriousness, for lack of a better word, I think makes it sometimes challenging for those kids who are in that environment to have the kind of, you know, desire that you were just talking about, where when the kid gets on campus now, he's like, hey, I'm excited to kind of put my stamp on the basketball world here, as opposed to, man, I've been doing basketball nonstop since I was 9. Now here I'm coming back and having to do it all again. And you see a lot of cases where kids get burned out. And that goes to something else that you talked about, Todd, which was, you know, when you were growing up, and I'm about 10 years older than you, so I didn't grow up in the AAU system either. I grew up kind of playing on the playground and play with my friends in the neighborhood and that kind of thing. And nowadays kids don't do that to the same degree. They're all, you know, playing in a gym somewhere in the AAU system, or they're working out with a trainer. And I think that there's good and bad to both of those scenarios. And I'm not here to dump on today's, you know, world as the old guy, get off my lawn. But I do think that there's benefits that come with both systems. And I think you did a really good job of describing what the dangers are of the current system, is that kids just play so much, which, you know, in one sense can be good. You can develop your skills. The more you play, the more you practice, you know, chances are the better you can be. But I think there's a real danger in burning kids out, as opposed to a guy like you who played multiple sports and even on to college played 2 sports. I think there's something to be said for that, for sure.
I always ask my guys, it's interesting. I'm like, okay, what are you doing, you know, in the summer? Because our guys are all over the place, and at Division III, you're not allowed to keep them here,
right,
and do workouts or anything. So I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Well, I'm trying to find a gym. I'm like, well, there's a park. Like, don't people play outside anymore? Like, I used to remember going to parks in Pittsburgh, and that would be the best runs you could get. Like, you
for sure.
You know, our guys are, oh, I need to get in this. Like, well, don't you have friends you played in high school with? Like, can't you go out and play in the park? Like, can't you go, like, into your high school gym and play instead of paying all this money to play in the league? Like, there's ways to get better that, you know, there's enough guys that can play basketball somewhere. Like, you know, you got to be able to do, oh, I'm working on my game. Oh, well, go play a little bit somewhere. That's, I think, a lot of my guys, probably more than half, need to go play. They need to play more, like, instead of just working on their game. Like, they need to just play at times. And, you know, most people say, oh, they need to work on their game. Well, I think, you know, I see a lot of it. Okay, their skill might be good, but they can't play once the action's real.
Right, right. Yeah, I want to ask you that. Like, give me your opinion on this, because this is a thing that we've talked to a couple other coaches about, but I think it's something that is a challenge in today's game, and I think you described it pretty well. I want you to expound on it, and that is, I think that kids today, if you look at the average kid, let's again just take a high school kid. I think the average high school player today is far more skilled than they were, let's say, when you graduated or when I graduated. I don't think there's any doubt about that, that if you just look at the pure skill from a guys who can handle the ball, guys who can shoot, guys who can, if you put them in a workout, they're going to look way better than a kid in their same spot on the depth chart from 20 or 30 years ago. And yet, I think you make the great point that when you put them in an actual game, and they have to play, and there's basketball IQ, and there's reads, and there's decision-making, I'm not sure that kids are better when it comes to that. I think they're more skilled, but I'm not sure they're better players. Like, when you're recruiting, do you see that? You see kids that are maybe more skilled than they were 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when you first, you know, when you first became a head coach, or am I off base here? It kind of seems like they're, you know, they're more skilled today, but maybe not better players.
Yeah, I would say that's true. You know, our guys are more willing to go, you know, I think with all the technology. I didn't have a shooting gun. We didn't have a shooting gun where I was before I got here until, you know, probably 5-7 years into coaching. Like, I didn't even know what one was.
Right.
And now I think guys are more apt to go down and shoot on the gun and, you know, just sit there and make 150 shots or 200. Well, you're not getting better by doing that. You might get a little bit better. But I think guys are so used to it in high school and everywhere they're at, just having the access to the gun and trainers. And so they're, you know, they're more skilled, but, you know, they, like a couple of our guys, I don't want to get into details, but we have a guard that's, you know, had a trainer his whole life, and, you know, like in drills, he's great and everything like that. But I after the year, I was like, you need to go play. Like, you need to play this summer. Like, you don't need to hire your trainer back. Like, no, you know, no offense to that guy. Like, he did a great job because he's ultra, you know, can do every drill in America, can do everything. But like, when the game, when the action, when the heat gets on, you know, can he really play? And that's what I told him. I said, instead of working out with a trainer, like, go get some friends and go play pickup, or go find some older guys and play in the leg and play with a leg. Like, don't worry about working out and like your crossover and your, like, that stuff's all going to stay, but like, how about go play a little bit? So I think, you know, you're totally accurate. You know, guys are probably more skilled now, but I don't know if they know how to play the game as well.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's such a hard thing because there's just not the same. I know, again, when I was growing up, I could go to this park on this night or this gym on that day, or I could go, used to be on Friday nights, you could go play at Tri-C for a dollar. They had open gym. You could go sit in line to try to be the first one there to get in play. And those places, they just don't exist as much anymore. And, you know, you mentioned about playing outdoors. And, you know, kids today, especially kids who are suburban kids who have access to gyms and trainers and all that kind of stuff, they just they look at you like you're crazy when you tell them that, you know, you're going to play outside. They're like, what do you mean? Yeah. What do you mean play outside? And it's like a completely foreign concept. And I'm sure you, and I know I did as a kid, played way more outside basketball than I did indoor basketball during the time from when I was, let's say, 12 to 18, for sure. Just because that's where the players were. That's where I felt like I could get better. And I think that when kids aren't playing as much and they are spending more time just working on drill work, you don't see that same level of, you know, learning as far as the transition from what they're doing in practice to what translates into a game. Because I think the more game-like you can make your practices, the more translation there's going to be in terms of the learning. And when kids just spend a whole bunch of time where all they're doing is drills, it makes it very tough. And I'm sure you see that to a large degree at, you know, at the level that you're coaching.
Oh yeah, big time.
All right. So when you're going through your college playing career, at what point during that time did you know that you wanted to coach, or did you always kind of know you wanted to coach when you got done playing? At what point did you say, hey, coaching is something that I'd like to pursue? And obviously you played a bunch of different sports. So what was it that made you say basketball is going to be the one that I want to coach?
You know, it was, I think I was a phys ed and health major. And so going into my senior year, I had a student teach, and I had broken my hand like in pickup, and I was going to student teach and all this. So I was missing all our open gyms. And I was like, well, I really miss like basketball when I wasn't, you know, able to play as much, you know, I didn't know I would miss it that much. And then I was like student teaching, and I was like, this is not for me. And I they don't tell you until that. I said, I'm not going to be able to do this the rest of my life. And, you know, at that point it was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And my coach at that point, was like, oh, okay, you might be all right to coach. And I was like, oh, okay, really, you think? And I was like, all right, maybe that's something I thought of. And that's really how it happened. And, you know, I kind of was like a coach on the floor. I could always see what was going on, or knew what was going on with the game, you know, that other guys had no idea that might be able to score more than I could, or, you know, and, you know, I was always the guy playing defense and making an extra pass. And so I was like, oh, okay, this might be, ability to do it. And it's actually interesting. One of the guys I played with, who was like my roommate and, you know, good friend, is actually the G League coach for the Miami Heat. So two guys that played basketball together on the same team and graduated the same year. Actually, he was a college coach, but now he's in with the NBA with the Heat. So that's I guess maybe our coach was a guy that really helped us say, okay, maybe this is something you guys will be good at. And, you know, so, and that's really where it came out about, you know, and I'm glad I did it. You know, I never thought I would be, you know, gosh, I'm getting old, almost 18 years from now or whatever it is, I, you know, 17 years I've been coaching it. I would never thought that would be the case.
So your first foray into a career choice was you thought you were going to be a phys ed teacher and possibly maybe a high school coach. Was that your original intent?
Yeah. I didn't even know if I would even coach. I was just, okay, I'm going to be a phys ed. Both my parents are educators. I figured, okay, maybe I'll be a phys ed in health and then get, you know, a master's and maybe decide to become like a guidance counselor or principal or something along those lines. And, you know, I student taught, and I still remember like, oh, this is not for me. And, you know, I don't remember much about a lot of things, but I can remember like driving to teach and be like, oh, this is awful. I remember playing at Kenyon on a Tuesday, actually against Shaka Smart. He was in school then. and coming back, or actually maybe that wasn't the year. He was not a good player. So when you see him on TV, he was Shaka Smart was not a good college player. But we I remember coming back from Kenyon to Bethany, and I got back at like 2 a.m. and I had to be at the school the next day to teach at like 6 or 6:30, and I had like an hour drive. I said, well, what am I doing? Like, this is not what I want to do the rest of my life. And you know, I think that was the where it came about.
Well, good thing your coach was there for you to help you out and steer you in a new direction.
Yeah, thank God.
So the first experience that you got after you got after you graduated from Bethany was with Hartwick, is that right?
Yeah, I was the I remember interviewing, I think I interviewed at like Heidelberg or Muskingum for like a GA. Thank goodness it didn't work out. And I ended up going to Hartwick. You know, my college coach, Hartwick's in Oneonta, New York, which is right by, about a half hour from Cooperstown, upstate, like really in the middle of nowhere. And I've never been to, I didn't know if I was ever in New York State at that point in my life. And my college coach was from there. The gym's named after this older coach, Nick Lambrose. And so I went as assistant for 2 years, and we were not good. My first year, I went through a coaching change too. So I was there with one guy, Tim McGraw, and he had a bunch of little kids and decided to become an insurance agent. He was, at that point, he was the all-time leading scorer of the at Hartwick, and then he was the coach. And then I worked for another guy, Paul Culpo, who came from UMass, a Division I assistant, and he really changed my recruiting, my philosophy on coaching, you know, how hard I needed to work, everything like that. So I don't think I don't even know if I'd still be in a business without Paul. I don't really tell him that ever. you know, he's now the head coach at Castleton State, and, you know, was out of his mind with recruiting, first head coaching job. I remember I have stories I probably can't tell in here because he would kill me if he ever listened to this. But, you know, I just remember the intensity that he brought to the program, the, you know, the recruiting. He would just, I was everywhere. I remember leaving a game at halftime. We were playing someone. We were getting our butts kicked. Like, we were so bad. And we ran the flex, too. Oh, my God. We had all – that's what his thing was. He's a crazy story. I'll tell you. After – so at halftime, we're losing. I'll give you two quick stories about him. And he's like, all right, find a game. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, we're losing by 30. Get the hell out of here. We're not going to – we have no chance of winning. And I was the only assistant. So I just got in we had a rental car or like a school car. I just got in and drove to a high school game. We didn't get that kid, but at least I had somewhere to go.
That's funny.
And then another time he was a little nuts. And at one point he swung a clipboard and hit me in the face and cut me open. And I had like blood coming down my face. He didn't mean to. And so the whole game I had like a rag on it or like something. So after the game, we were in the locker room. We lost. He's like, the problem with you guys is my assistant coach is way tougher than you guys because I hit him. If I hit one of you like that, you would have had to go to the hospital or something. I'm like, oh, my God. And so, you know, he was
– that's funny.
Yeah, he was unique. He would just put a pile of papers on my desk every morning and say, call all these schools, find his players. And, you know, I just cold called like that. You know, that was really before the internet and being able to find guys on Twitter and, you know,
right,
and everything like that. So I remember – you know, that really changed my, you know, recruiting philosophy and how I recruited, how hard I needed to work to, you know, make it in this business. And then, you know, we ran the flex, and I remember, like, we had all these different entries. There were A, B, C, D, E, and Alabama, everyone was a college name, so it was the first letter. So if you called Boston College, it would be B, and it would be some different entry out of like Horn set in the flex.
Right, right.
And so I remember that, and I remember we had these out of bounds plays. This is crazy. I can remember this stuff. And it would be like whoever threw it in was one, whoever was in front of the ball was two. Like the first number was whoever threw it in, the second number was in front of the ball, and the third number was ball side. So if I called like 321, it would be three and thrown in, two in front of the ball, one in the corner. And it'd be like 321 power, and it would be like a post up, and like the one man would come off or like whatever. So like I remember, like if I screwed it up, like we were bad. Like I'm telling you, we were bad. If I screwed it up, it was like, why did you call 321 power? I'm like, I think at some point I looked at him and I was like, listen, we do not have good enough players, so it doesn't matter what I call, it's not gonna work. So
we could be running anything. That's hilarious. That's funny.
Remember, it's crazy what the stuff you remember, like you. I don't remember much, but I remember that stuff. So
those kinds of stories I think stick out without question. you know, the funny ones and things that are a little bit unusual, and especially those kind of interpersonal relationships and stuff that just, I mean, it's definitely something that when you look back on your time, you know, I think the wins and losses, something to remember as a coach is that, you know, a lot of times the wins, the losses, the game, the individual games, all that stuff kind of fades away. And really what you do remember are those memorable things like what you just described. I want to ask you about that first experience. What was the most surprising thing to you coming out of being a player and transitioning into being a coach? What were some things about coaching that maybe you didn't realize when you were on the playing side of it? You're like, oh, I didn't realize coaches do that. Or, man, I didn't know they spent so much time on this. What do you remember from that first experience coaching in terms of what you didn't maybe think was going to be part of it that was when you looked at it from a player perspective?
I think the first thing I realized when I got to Hartwick is illegally I probably played open gym or played pickup with a couple of the guys or whatever. I don't know if I played with them when I was on my interview. I don't even know what it was. But I remember right away I was the best player on the floor. And so I think right away I realized like, oh, my God, we're not going to be good. You know, so I knew that was – and, you know, in college I was like the fourth or fifth guy. And that's why we were a good team. And I was like, well, that's not going to be good. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that, you know, the biggest take was the scouting, because we didn't do that much scouting. So I think that was one of the biggest things, like, oh, my God, I got to know this. I got to know that. That was, you know, that was one thing. And then just probably the road trips to go find kids and the arrivals back at 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. from watching a kid play and then being up at 8 or 7 to work a kid out during the season, or, you know, be up at 8 to make sure I had their scouting report done for the next game. I think that was the thing that I never realized about, like when coaches would come and play, watch me play in high school, I just thought, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. They're here. And you don't realize that, oh, that guy's going to get home at 2 a.m. from coming to watch me play. So I think that was the, you know, the one thing that was like, okay, there's a lot more into this than I ever thought. It's just not, oh, kids are just going to show up. I guess you don't realize that, oh, I got to go get these kids to get here. And how am I going to, you know, convince a 18-year-old that Hartwick College is better than going to Ithaca or St. John Fisher or Elmira, you know? And that, I think that was the, you know, one of the things that I learned quick is, okay, you got to be a little different. And, you know, you need to, you know, you need to be able to work at this and make sure these kids, you can build a relationship real quick in a couple of months. And, you know, that was before, I think that was right when cell phones were coming popular, and it's crazy as it sounds, like emails weren't even used that much. So it was a lot of calling, home phones, trying to get a hold of kids.
Right.
You know, where the technology now is, you know, I can sit here, actually, as I'm sitting here right now, I'm texting with a kid from Florida. Like, that wouldn't have been able to be happen back in the day. You know what I mean?
For sure.
That stuff that wasn't able to happen. So I think just, you know, I think the biggest thing was just like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know how much work actually went into this job.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's jump to that technology piece of recruiting. Has the technology made it easier? Or has it made it where, since everybody can do it, it's just different? Which one would you describe it?
I think it's, you know, I think it's made it easier for people. I think, you know, back in, you know, a couple years ago, or, you know, 10, 12 years ago, you might have been able to find a guy. I think you still can find guys that no one knows about. But I think it's, you know, I think it's interesting. I think it's helped. I think it's made it easier for, you know, communication to be able to get a hold of a kid. You know, like today I was doing our pre-reads where I can get a kid's transcript, test score, senior schedule, major, and I can get a pre-read on to find out if he's going to be getting into school and everything like that. And that, you know, all kid doesn't need to screenshot me, and I can make it into a PDF. And so years ago that would have had to be mailed. And so I think it's, you know, it's really changed the game. But, you know, I think you have to be up on to what people are doing with the, you know, recruiting wise, with making sure you have Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff to make sure kids have, you know, they're going to click likes on stuff. So make sure they're going to like your stuff. You know, I think that's the thing about it. And, you know, it's changed it, but it's still, you know, I think it's still about working hard and getting in the car. And, you know, now maybe it helps us here at Case Western be able to recruit a kid from California or Texas or somewhere like that, because now I can watch them on video, where I can pop a game on from his AAU team and watch the whole game on YouTube. So I think that's, you know, that stuff's helped and changed the way recruiting has gone a little bit too.
Yeah, I would guess you're able to go, everybody's able to go much more national, at least in terms of being able to see that kind of stuff and be able to communicate. Because, you know, again, you go back 20 years ago, and if you were looking at a kid from California, they'd be mailing you tapes. And, you know, your chances of ever actually doing anything besides talking with them on the phone was pretty minimal. Whereas now you can, I'm sure, get a pretty good read on whether or not the kid, A, can play at, you know, at your level, and then B, whether or not they can learn a lot more about your university through just, you know, communication with you through the internet, through Twitter and Facebook and all the social media and everything. So I think that there's probably, hopefully, you know, it allows both sides to check the other side out more thoroughly and hopefully come to make a good decision that's a better fit for everybody. But I still think it's, you know, I'm sure recruiting takes up a lot of your time. I'm sure it's a challenge. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into you, you know, as a head coach. So let's transition to that. I know you had another stop at Vassar, but let's jump ahead to when you got your first head coaching job. Talk a little bit about what you learned in your time as an assistant that you took into your first job as a head coach, and then maybe something that surprised you the first time when you got to be, you know, when you got to take over your own program there at Hartwick.
Yeah. So, you know, I left Hartwick and went to Vassar for 2 years, and I was equipment manager there and, you know, a bunch of other stuff. So I was able to learn some stuff there. And then I was lucky enough to get a job at Case Western for 3 years. And I really think that was one of the reasons I was able to get the Hartwick job, is coming from a great university and, you know, learning and being in the, you know, the conference we're in, one of the best in Division III. And so then, you know, I got the Hartwick job at 27 or, yeah, I think it was 27. So I was pretty young to be a head coach at the college level. And I think the first thing that I learned is when I got there, I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be, you know, easy when it comes to this or that, you know, when budget, like all this stuff, I'm going to buy all this Nike stuff. I remember like getting my budget and was like, whoa, like this is all the money we have. Like, and I guess I'd never been really privy to like anything like that. And so I remember getting that and I'm like, we have $15 to feed a kid a day. Like, you know, like all that stuff that you never think about as
right.
an assistant, because right. you just don't worry about it. Cause you're like, oh, we got all the money in the world. So I think that was the first shock. And what was the second part of that question?
So the second part is, what's something that you learned as in your time as an assistant that helped you as a head coach?
Yeah. You know, I think the philosophy I had on coaching, what we were going to do, you know, how we were going to play, I think that got molded. I think I learned what I wasn't going to do more than I learned what I was going to do. You know, from the coaches I work with, like if there's something would happen, I'd be like, well, I'm never going to do that. Or, you know, I don't want to do that with my team. I remember in college, ran Princeton for a year and I absolutely hated it. So I was like, well, I never want to run Princeton. You know, I was like, we're never going to run Princeton because I hated playing in it. And, you know, we ran flex it Hartwick when I was the assistant. It was like, well, we're never running flexed, you know. So I think I learned a lot more like that than I did. And, you know, I think I worked for a lot of people there, like man to man. I was like, well, you know, I think I was more apt to be willing to be like, okay, I'm going to play some junk defense, I'm going to be able to play zone, you know. I think that was more, you know, more apt to do stuff like that, because I always wanted to try it when I was an assistant. No one ever do it. So then I became a head coach and I'm like, well, we're going to play triangle too. We're going to do this. And, you know, we did, you know, and we were able to be pretty successful. And when I got the Hartwick job, my first year, we were really not great. I'll put it that way. We had some guys that were starting that shouldn't have been college players. And, you know, we hung in there. We were tough. We were physical. And that's why I try to have our teams like all the time. And, you know, so I think I got the job and I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. And then I was a couple of days into practice, like, oh my God, like, what are we going to do to win some, am I ever going to win a game? And,
right.
you know, and, you know, I think I was able to get the guys to realize, okay, you know, this is going to be, we made it as fun as we could. We had the seniors have the best experience they could, so that I could use them for recruiting to call kids. And, you know, and, you know, so we had the best year we could have with, you know, with the record. I didn't know, I had no even idea what my record was that year.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, so that, I think that was part of the process, is learning more what I didn't want to do. And that's what I would tell young guys, if they're getting the coaching and, you know, working for guys, well, figure out what you don't like more than what you like, because you're always going to be able to find stuff you like, but you're always going to remember the stuff you don't like, so that way you don't do it whenever you're the head coach.
Yeah, I think especially when you have personal experience with stuff that you don't like, I think it's very easy to pay attention to that and be like, oh yeah, I'm never going to do that. Whether it's an X's and O thing, or it could be just a culture or a team building or whatever you want to, however you want to describe it. I think that the things that you see kind of like goes back to what we talked about before. Some of the things that are memorable, you know, whether it's a loss or some personal story that you have, or just something that you remember from that didn't turn out the way you wanted to. I think those are the things that sometimes are the most vivid memories. And to your point, I think you stick that in a notebook, you write that down in a journal, and you're like, yeah, I never want to do this because here's the reasons why, whether it's just you didn't like coaching it or you didn't feel like it was going to be successful or whatever. And then eventually, like you said, especially today, there's so much information out there and there's so many people that are willing to share and talk to you and, you know, so many great people to learn from that you can always find great stuff to learn from, whether that's, again, X's and O's out on the floor, whether that's culture stuff, you know, regardless, I think you can always find the stuff you like. But you definitely, I think that's great advice to a young coach, is to find the stuff that you don't like, find the stuff that you know you're not going to do. And that way, if somebody ever brings it to you, you can be like, yeah, I had experience with that. I know I don't want to go down that road.
There's still time to register for the final Head Start basketball camp of the summer at Brunswick Rec Center. We'll also be having our Summer Skills Challenge at the Strongsville Rec Center on July 29th and 30th. You can find out more information or get registered for both of those events at www.headstartbasketball.com.
What's something that you look back on that first year and compare that to where you are today as a coach? What's something that you feel like you've gotten significantly better at than you were that first year as a head coach? Could be an X and O thing, could be just a team management, could be culture. Just give me something that you feel like you're a lot better at today than you were in that first year.
Yeah, you know, I just think it's not staying off the officials, because I think I'm worse than that as I've gotten older. Most people can say they've gotten better at that. I think I've been able to be adaptive. Like, if anything, like not saying, okay, we're running this just because this is what we've been doing for 8 years and this is the only way we're going to play. I think it's being able to handle probably a little criticism, listen to my assistants more, be willing to maybe change some stuff. I think my first 2 years or 3 years, I probably was as stubborn as they come, and, you know, not listening to people. And I think I listen more now to what people, my assistants might tell me, or, you know, other people might tell me. And I think that's, something I wouldn't have done 12 years ago.
What do you attribute that change to? Just being more experienced, more comfortable with yourself as a head coach, more confident in what you're doing, that you're willing to take suggestions and, you know, have those conversations with your assistants? What do you attribute that to?
I contribute one to the guy I was talking about before, the gym's named after Nick Lambros. He sat on my bench for my 7 years at Hartwick, and he would just come in every day with a new thing, or, you know, call me a stubborn, you know, whatever. And so I think he wore me down a little bit. And then just, I think, you know, once we established it, okay, we're, you know, I kind of, you know what I want to do, how we want to play, you know, to what extent, you know, that can change. And, you know, I think, you know, just confidence that, okay, I know I've won these games before. You know, I hate saying I, but my teams have won these games before.
Right, right.
You know, I can listen to different opinions, you know, and stuff like that. So I think it's just maybe just a little bit getting older and just maturing a little bit, and, you know, being able to handle maybe taking some criticism from some people that's, you know, not what you want to hear, but, you know, that maybe back in the day I wanted to listen to.
Yeah, I think as you grow and as you get older, I think you have more experience. I think it becomes a little bit easier to take in information from other people, to take that criticism once you've kind of established yourself and you feel more confident in what you're doing. And I know I can speak to that myself. And as a young coach, you kind of think you have all the answers. You think you know everything that there is to know about the game. And sometimes you tune out the people around you, or in this case, there's a lot of things that you can learn from people that now you don't even know that you can learn, whether that's through the internet or going to clinics or talking to people, however. And as a young coach, I know I wasn't necessarily as open to that. And as I've gotten older, you know, you learn that there's lots of different people out there doing lots of great things with the game that you can learn from. And so I think I've become, at least speaking for myself, I've become a lot more open-minded about just different ways of going about doing things that I was certainly when I was younger. Talk to me a little bit, Todd, about how you utilize your assistants as a head coach? What are some of the things that you expect from them? What are some of the things that they can expect from you as a head coach? How you help them to grow in their profession, whether they want to continue to stay in an assistant role, whether with you or at another program, or if they eventually have aspirations of becoming a head coach, how do you help out your assistants? What do you require of them?
I it's changed over the years. I think it, it really depends on, what we need each given year. Like my current assistant, he's real good. He actually, speaking of that, he actually interviewed for a head coaching job yesterday at the Division III level. So hopefully it went well and he gets the job, and I might be looking for someone here, shortly, but his responsibilities are everything. I don't think there's anything I don't trust him doing that I don't, want him to do, he does everything. I've never had more than one full-time guy. So I think it's with my assistants, it's everything I'm doing, they're doing too. And, hopefully they're, my current guy's a really good recruiter. So like he keeps me, we're really ahead of where we need to be recruiting probably. And, that's mainly because of him. And so every Monday I'll be like, hey, I'm talking to a certain amount of guys. Like who else do I need to be talking to this week? So I think the main purpose, the start is probably recruiting. That's what I use them for the most. And then it's just, okay, how much can I trust them to do film? How much can I trust them to do workouts? How much can I, trust them to, do this, do that. And, the more trust I think I have in them, the more responsibilities I give them. And, my guy right now, I let him do everything, I'll have him meet with guys academically and, pretty much anything that I'm doing, they're going to do too. And, that's the only way it's probably going to get done. And, he does my usually my assistants do more of the player development on the floor because I think they hear my voice a lot. And, if I'm in there every workout during the season yelling at them as well or telling them what to do, I think they might get sick of me a little bit even more than they are already. And so I think, just finding out what their strengths are. I think that's what I do with my assistants is try to find out what they're good at and then try to utilize them to whatever they can be and just prepare them. Cause I someday, hopefully the goal is that they're the next head coach or wherever. And I need them to be prepared and ready to go for that position when they get it.
So what's the number one trait you look for when you're interviewing an assistant? What's the number one thing that you're looking for when you sit down with a guy and you're trying to decide whether or not he's the right person to bring onto your staff? What's the main thing or maybe one or two things that you're like, these are non-negotiables. I have to have this if I'm going to have this guy on my staff.
I think a guy that has a self-starter that's going to be willing to recruit, that's I'm not going to have to sit there and be like, hey, who did you call today? Or, hey, plug this into our database. Did you talk to this kid today? Like, that's, I think, the number one thing I've learned is make sure someone has the ability to be a self-starter that's going to go out and be like, okay, coach, hey, Todd, here's 25 guys I talked to last night. You probably need to talk to these eight next week or on tomorrow. And, and I think that's one thing I look for first is just a guy that's self-started. That's, that maybe is just the thinks outside of the box a little bit. That's going to go and maybe work and do some stuff that other guys aren't going to do. And, maybe recruit a little bit. So I think the number one thing with me is probably recruiting. I think that's going to be the number one, the biggest aspect. And then, I've actually found guys that haven't been like that have either been managers or haven't been the greatest players in college have been my better assistants. And so maybe sometimes I look for that too. Like I think the basketball comes to to everyone. And I feel that with our program that we kind of know what we're going to do. And I don't we're not going to change, we're going to change a little bit where we know what exactly what we're going to be built on. And I don't think I need someone that's going to come in and reinvent the wheel. I think I need someone that's going to come in and be like, oh, okay, hey, maybe instead of, icing this ball pick or whatever, we should try to trap it. And this is why. So I think, the number one thing is just being a self-starter. And two, I think being willing to share opinions and maybe being willing to, be shot down too, if it's not something, and then come back with another opinion. So I don't know what that even would be called, but
courage, bravery, yeah, stupidity, yeah. I don't know, one of those.
And I think that's something I look for too, is someone that's gonna, okay, I might say no the first three times, and the fourth time I would say, okay, yeah, you're right, let's do that. And you know, and, you know, hopefully it works in a game. So I'm not looking at you and say, well, that's why we didn't want to do that. And, you know, so,
right.
But I think, you know, just someone that's the main thing for me is someone that's self-starter and, you know, someone that's willing to, you know, put themselves out there and do whatever, you know, I need to take. And I'm not a guy that you need to be in your office at 8 a.m. and when I leave, you leave. Like, that's, I think that's overrated, especially nowadays with technology and everything. You can do everything. You can do everything you from your couch if you need to, or, you know, you don't need to be in the office for 20 hours a day just because that's how everyone else does it. Like, no, I think as long as you're getting your stuff done, it doesn't really matter where you're doing it from.
Yeah. I love that, being a self-starter. I think that great lesson out there for anybody. And no matter whether you're a player or whether you're a coach, I think if you're a self-starter, you're going to attract a lot of attention from people, because those are the kind of people that tend to have success, because they don't need somebody else underneath them lighting a fire and telling them what to do. Those are people who kind of grab the bull by the horns and get out there and do what they're going to do. So I think that's a great way to describe what you're looking for as somebody who's a self-starter. So let's go from your time at Hartwork. Let's get up to date here and talk about how the opportunity came for you to get back to Case, and why you took that opportunity, and then we'll kind of get into how you're building the program down there at Case right now.
Yeah, I you know, my first year at Hartwick, we weren't great, and I remember probably the changing point of our team and program was we were playing someone, and we had just lost, and, you know, this kid shows up. I remember these are like the things that change in how you get a new job. And he, this kid showed up, he had like a black eye. He was like a 6'4", maybe 6'5", five man. He played at a real small school in New York, and he shows up and like with his video, and I'm like, oh, okay, great. And I like pop his video. I'm like, oh, this kid's not bad. So my assistant at that time, I'm like, hey, Nick, you need to go see Jared play tomorrow. And so my assistant calls me at like end of first quarter and goes, hey, by the way, he's the best dude recruiting. And I'm like, what? Like, and I'm like, so we saw his last like 17 games. He came to Hartwick, and in his 4 years, he went to the NCAA tournament three times. He was the all-time leading scorer and rebounder in our school history at Hartwick. So, you know, I think that was a change. He actually just got in the Hall of Fame 2 days ago, or a couple days ago. So I remember that was the point where I was like, okay, we got a good player. My second year, we went to the NCAA tournament. My third year, we went 23-2 in the regular season. You know, in his senior year, we went back to the NCAA tournament. The year after, we went to – so, you know, we started winning, and then this job came open at Case, and, you know, the University Athletic Association, which we're in, you know, coaches – the jobs, there's only eight of them, and they're hard to get. The coach retired from WashU in our league. He was there 35 years. The NYU coach was there 30 plus years. Brandeis was there 20. The Carnegie Mellon coach who's currently there has been there 30. So, you know, they're really hard to get. And when you can get one, you jump at the chance to get them. And, you know, they're just, you know, and so when Case came open, I'm from Pittsburgh and had worked here. I was like, okay, that's going to be, you know, something I'm very interested in. And, you know, living in Cleveland, I like living in Cleveland, and, you know, those opportunities don't come around often. So, you know, I was able to get this job, and, you know, now we're trying to build here. And I thought it was going to be an easy fix. To be honest with you, I thought, okay, year two or three, we're going to be, you know, an NCAA tournament. We're going to be winning. And it's been a lot harder than I had imagined, put it that way.
So what are some of the challenges that you face that maybe are more challenging than what you would have thought had coming in?
Yeah, I didn't know our talent level would be where it was when I got here. You know, I thought I was going to come into a place and, you know, UAA job and top 30 private research university. I was like, okay, we're going to have really good players. And, well, that wasn't the case. So I think that was the problem, you know, problem is building, you know, from there, like trying to figure out. And, you know, I thought there would be like, okay, these guys are going to work hard. And, you know, there was some of that stuff a lot of that stuff had to be changed. We had to put a weight program in. We had to get guys that were willing to come in the gym and work harder. We had guys willing to lift, you know, and I didn't think any of that was going to be the problem, if that makes sense. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm starting to bare bones here. And, you know, then now we're trying to catch up on talent wise. And, you know, it's not the easiest when you're at a high academic school to get, you know, the guys that maybe you need to get over the hump right away. And so we've been building, and, you know, I thought we're going to take the leap last year, and we had a couple, you know, crazy little things happen, and, you know, and all of a sudden we were 7-3 in Miami. We played in a tournament in Miami, and, going to our conference, and if you had told me you were going to win two more games, I would have told you you're out of your mind. I don't have much money in my life, but I probably bet you every dollar I had that there's no way we're only winning two more games. I thought it was going to be 15-10, and then looking at the year coming ahead, we're going to be, you know, 18-19. And, you know, I tell our guys all the time here, our guys, the NCAA tournament, this and that, we've never, in our league, we've never been 7-7, the best record in school history, 6-8. And, you know, my second year, we were 6-8 here, and I thought we were going to get that this year over 500. So, you know, I tell our guys, okay, before we worry about anything else, let's worry about getting that 7 wins, and then anything can happen. And, you know, I think, you know, I thought it was going to be a lot quicker, put it that way. And, you know, it's just been a challenge of finding the right kids, you know, getting them to believe that we can actually do this, and we're not, you know, when we go to WashU or we go to Emory or we go to Rod, we're not supposed to lose those games. We need to go in and think we're supposed to win that. And I think that's been the biggest challenge for me a little bit right now.
So how do you go about changing that culture? So when you come in and it's not what you expect in terms of, you know, let's say the work ethic and just the, you know, guys being willing to get in the weight room and put in extra time and do the things that it takes to have a winning program, how do you go about changing that? Is it, what do you do day to day to instill the kind of winning culture that you want to have day in and day out in your program?
You know, I think we do like on floor stuff. We try to compete as much as we can and, you know, make everything, every drill a winner and loser and always a consequence if you lose, to try to get guys to, you know, play with that toughness every drill and practice. And, you know, and then I think, you know, just trying to get the upperclassmen to realize, okay, you know, we're going to win these games. And, you know, when young guys come in, okay, we're supposed to lift, we're supposed to condition, we're supposed to get in the gym and work extra. I think that's a lot of it, instead of come in and be like, okay, this is like, you know, intramurals. Well, that's not the case. You know, we need to, you know, make sure that we have stuff to, you know, in place that they know that this is what is needed, instead of saying, you know, this is, we're just going to come in and, you know, just do whatever. Like, I think it's just a matter of having them in here and say, okay, this is what expected, and we're expecting we're going to win. And, you know, this is important that, you know, we lift on a Tuesday. This is important that we condition on a Tuesday. And I think it's just a matter of getting them to understand that, okay, this isn't going to be built just by coming in and maybe getting a better player. Well, of course that really helps too, but you know, everything matters when we go on the road, and, you know, and all the stuff in the off season, getting guys to buy into the lifting, to buy into that. And, you know, I think it's just, you know, results need to help, and, you know, and then just getting them the belief that, you know, when games are close, we're going to win. And, you know, if we look at our games this year, we lost, I could go in the locker room every game, and I probably did it almost every game at halftime, and be like, okay, you know, the ball, we're either going to have the ball up one or down with the ball with a minute to go or 2 minutes to go, or are we going to make the plays to win? And we just didn't this year. And, you know, we just didn't have that closer, the guy that, you know, that could make the play when needed. And, you know, we didn't have any seniors. So I'm hoping that, you know, we have a couple seniors that decide next year, okay, this is my last go around, and we're not losing these games. And I think until that belief is, you know, believed by everyone, we might still lose them. And, you know, that's the biggest thing I'm fighting, is trying to get them to, okay, we're supposed to win these games, instead of, okay, we're happy that we lose by one or lose at the buzzer. No, it's like, okay, we want to win these games. And, you know, I think that's where, you know, we're getting to a point a little bit, is guys are, you know, I think it's the first year since I've been here, after we lost some close ones, guys were actually upset for the first time. And I said, okay, we're kind of moving in the right direction. Now we just, you know, need to start expecting to win these games.
Yeah, I think there's something with that too. You know, we talked back to the beginning of the conversation about the, you know, the AAU kind of mentality of, you know, I lose a game on the weekend and, you know, I'm playing another one an hour later, and where are we going to eat lunch? And sometimes I think that losing doesn't burn as much as it did for some kids, you know, as it did in the past, because I know, like, when I was in high school, I played 20 games, and then, yeah, you know, I wasn't playing 35, 40, 50, 60 AAU games in a spring and summer. And so those games all meant a lot more to me. And I think it's just, I think it's a process where you get kids who start taking the game more seriously, they start buying in. And then as your older guys, your guys who have been in the program, start selling that to your younger kids that you're bringing in, then I think that's when you start to really see that turn, where it's not just coming from you, that culture, but it's coming from the players who are already there saying, hey, look, this is what we need to do, because here's where we want to get, or here's where we are right now, and we want to get to a new place that we haven't been before. And I think when your upperclassmen, when your returning players can convey that to your younger players, then I think that's when you really have something.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what, you know, hopefully we can get to here.
So talk to me a little bit about your recruiting process and just how at the Division III level, describe some of the unique challenges that you have, A, as a Division III school, and then B, combined with sort of the high academic standards that obviously are in place at Case. Talk to me about how all that plays into the type of player you're going to recruit and then how you go about finding those guys and then actually recruiting them and getting them to campus.
Yeah, you know, it's unique. I always say if we were in any other conference in America, then when we were in, it probably wouldn't even matter sometimes how we were recruited, because I think we could just get enough guys showing up that were good enough players because of the academics. But just with the league we're in, we just got to find, you know, we're playing every game against a team that could be a top 25 team in the country and has multiple guys that have turned down scholarship offers. And so I think just trying to, you know, compete with them is we have to be unique. And, you know, the biggest thing that the struggle we found that I found since I've been here is we don't have enough Ohio guys on our team. You know, I think guys in Ohio, one, maybe not even know what Case Western is. And two, they'll think going to like a Marietta or somewhere like that is the same as going to Case Western. And, you know, they're trying to portray that like, hey, you're going to Case Western because you're going to graduate and get a job that you're making $100,000 to $150,000. And you might go somewhere else and you might be hoping our guys hire you, you know. And I think that's kind of the thing we have to portray is like, how can we get kids from Ohio, especially Northeast Ohio, to one, understand what Case Western is, and two, you know, stay here. And, you know, that's been the biggest problem. And so this year we've been really attacking Ohio. My assistant and I, we've been to more events in Ohio trying to find guys that will, you know, that one, can get accepted, two, that the money works without scholarships, and three, you know, that are willing to stay at home. And, you know, so that was big, really important emphasis, because Northeast Ohio, especially this year, is loaded with really good players. And so can we, you know, find those guys? And I think a little bit of a challenge too is getting kids in. You know, our average ACT on our team is a 32. You know, our guys are really bright. And so trying to find those kids that can actually get in, you know, all over the place, but even here, you know, has been a challenge. And so, I think we're doing a better job in Ohio this year. We're at more events. We're involved with more guys. And, you know, and this year there's a few more guys that can get in, but one of the best players in our league went to St. Ignatius and his parents went to Case Western and he goes to Emory. So, you know, I think that's and his brother, who is a real nice player, is going to Wash U, and they weren't really interested in Case Western. So trying to find a niche of getting those kids interested, and then just, you know, trying to find the right guys, the, you know, one that can afford it. So without scholarships, we're a little unique. We give out merit aid scholarships. So we might, you know, to go to one of, you know, Williams or Amherst, one of the top academic schools, they don't give out merit aid. And so we might give you a $30,000. And so we kind of give you a scholarship to get our cost down to 35, even, you know, instead of 65. So, you know, we're a little unique that we give that. And, you know, just trying to find the right guys, the right fit, the right ACT or SAT score that fits our range of where it needs to be, you know, without maybe, you know, crossing over into the 35 or 36 ACTs that can go to any school in the country. So, you know, the challenges have been just, you know, I think the biggest challenge was I thought it was going to be easier to get Ohio kids, and it hasn't been, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. I was going to ask you, do you think that, because what I look at, especially on the Division III level here in Ohio, there's just so many schools at the D3 level that, you know, I guess, you know, we've talked to some coaches who are, you know, from the South, and then you have more NAI, and you maybe have some Division II, but here in Ohio, it's either pretty much you're either Division I or you're Division III. And there's very few Division II, there's very few NAI. And so I would always think that as a Division III school that it would be challenging, because obviously the pool of in-state players, you know, there's a certain size of that pool, and with so many schools, and obviously you're not all competing for the same type of kid because the academics and other things can be separators as well. But the reality is the pool of Division III players is only so big, and then you're having to recruit against all these other schools that are kind of in the same geographic area. I would think that that would be something that would kind of lead to what you were describing, which is the challenge of keeping kids that are in state, you know, getting them educated about what Case can offer and what you guys can do there.
Yeah, I think it, you know, a little bit, you know, with that is too, that other schools, you know, maybe that are good schools, but maybe not the level that we are at times, will also throw a kid maybe a full academic scholarship. And so then it's like, okay, I can go to school B for almost free, or I could go to Case Western for $30,000. Well, I'm going to go to school B and play in front of, you know, whatever fans, or, you know, it's still a good school. And so I think that's where we run in a little bit is, you know, especially, you know, it seems like some of the packages that we see are pretty outstanding. So I'm like, well, there's a reason those places are good real quick, you know,
right,
so
you
know,
sure.
In the coaching, you see, you know, I say all the time, it's really, you know, at the Division III level, it's, you know, you could have the worst gym in America. You could have the worst uniforms, worst budget. But if you gave good financial aid, you're probably going to be pretty good.
Yep.
So, you know, and that's usually what it comes down to is who's going to get in, who's going to get the most money. And that's, you know, that's the name of the game. And, you know, everyone can drop whatever they want or think they're, you know, a great coach. And, you know, there's great coaches out there, but usually the great coaches have a really good admissions department and a really good financial aid department.
Right.
And all of a sudden they look like, I just think about when I was in school, I looked at Marietta a little bit, and they were not good. And, you know, Otterbein and Capital and some of those places were, you know, taking all the players. And now the way that they changed the financial aid and the modeling at Marietta, they're like better in a, you know, it's like a Division I job down there. So, you know, and I think that's some of the stuff that, you know, outside looking, people don't understand until you actually see some of the packages or some of the, you know, ways people are doing things. And you're like, oh, now it makes sense.
Now it makes sense. Right, right.
Yeah, now it makes sense. And, you know, it's probably a little bit in the high school ranks, too, around here with what schools throw money at kids. And, oh, okay, now I understand why that kid's at a private school. Now I understand, you know. And,
right,
and
yep.
I think that's, you know, until you're in it and coaching, I don't think you realize that that's why some of these jobs are real good.
Yeah, for sure. And I think parents too sometimes need to be educated about what the whole process. We've talked to some other coaches about this, but I think there's a lot of confusion sometimes about the, you know, the college basketball recruiting process. It's a lot of times a mystery, especially for parents who are going through it maybe for the first time with their kid. And there's a little bit more information nowadays available, just like what we talked about with the internet and social media, although we all obviously have to be careful with that and make sure we're not getting misinformation.
Yeah.
But I do think that one of the things that people see is, you know, for a long time when kids are young and they're going up through the AAU system and social media is hyping them up and saying this and that and whatever. And I think that what people don't have an understanding of in a lot of cases, especially parents, is, and a lot of times the kids do too, don't have an understanding either, is just the how high the level of play is at the Division III level. And so can you talk a little bit about just how good the players are, and just so that maybe a high school parent who might be listening or a high school player, just about the level of play and the level of commitment that your guys have to the game of basketball?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because until you, like, I ask guys when I'm recruiting, have you ever seen a Division III game? Have you ever seen a Division II game? And guys would say, like, no. I'd be like, well, you know, I think you're going to be shocked at how good some of our guys are. And, you know, and when we're able to have kids play pickup with our guys when we're not in season, and some of the high school kids come in the fall, and I think they're like, oh, my gosh, like, this is – I got to get better, you know. And, you know, and I don't think they realize, like, how strong guys are. We say, you know, a little bit, when you go from high school, when you're in eighth grade to ninth grade, you don't expect to play on the varsity. You don't expect to get in games. And I think when kids leave high school and go to college, they were like, oh, okay, I expect to play as a freshman. Well, you're going from high school and you're an 18-year-old senior until against 22-year-old men. And I think that's really the difference is, you know, with everything is like, okay, when you get to college, guys are old, like, guys, you know, next year, this year we didn't have anyone on our team at 21. Next year, I'll have five guys that are 21 or 20, you know, we turn to 22 by the end of the year. And I just think, you know, freshmen coming in, well, they're, you know, they're playing against guys that have 30 pounds of muscle on them. And I think that's really the difference. And, you know, at the highest level of Division III, you can take one or two guys probably off each team and put them on, you know, an Akron or a Kent State. And those guys could be on the team, probably play minutes, just because they've played for 4 years at this level, you know, of college basketball, and they're pretty good by the time they're done. And, you know, and I just think the level of commitment is, you know, it's not easy here because our school's hard. and you know, our we're coming in for 2 hours of practice, and you know, then lifting and everything like that. I think it's a lot more time commitment than guys are, you know, are used to. And you know, and then our seasons are a lot longer. And you know, we start October 15th, and hopefully, you know, into March. It's a long season, and so I think guys don't understand. I go, okay, I get here and I got to work, and I got to, you know, put in extra time, and I got to be able to go in and make sure my grades are good, and I got to make sure I can get to study hall. You know, not, we don't study hall here, but you know, I got to make sure I can get to, you know, my laundry done. And you know how, you know, I said to a kid the other day, you got to understand, you got to decide when you're going to eat lunch, when you're going to eat dinner, you know, like, and that's stuff that like in high school, you don't even think about. And cause your mother's cooking or your folks or whoever, not mother, but you know, your family's making you dinner. And then you get to college and you're like, when do I eat? Like, you know, and so I think, you know, guys got to understand there's a lot more that goes into it than just coming in. Oh, I'm just going to come in and play right away. Well, that really doesn't happen too often. Especially yeah. The good programs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you got to be a really good player to be able to get on the floor, no matter what level of college basketball you're going to. It's very rare that guys don't come in and pay their dues and get into the program and understand, learn what it's all about, and then eventually get to the point where they can compete for minutes and get out on the court. And I just think that there's such a huge amount of misinformation out there that's fed to high school kids from all kinds of different sources that sometimes – get kids to maybe think higher of their ability than what maybe they have. And sometimes I think they miss out on opportunities that could be good opportunities for them because they are focused on maybe a higher level, or they think they're going to go to one place and then they get disappointed and it doesn't work out. And instead of just looking for what the best fit is, especially when we're talking about kids who have high academics, you know, obviously that opens up a whole world to those kids. And, you know, if what you're building at Case becomes a situation where, wow, now a kid who's a Cleveland kid or Northeast Ohio kid that is looking for a great academic institution and is looking for an opportunity to play high-level college basketball, now you're going to be able to get in the door with that kid and have that conversation and hopefully be able to bring him in and continue to build what you're building. So let me ask you this about just in general, when people come in and they watch Case Western Reserve play basketball, what is it that you want people to walk away from? If I'm a recruit, if I'm a fan that just walks into one of your games, what do you want somebody to take away from seeing your team play? What are some of the pillars that you build your program on?
You know, we need to be, I always tell our guys, we need to be like the tough team. You know, we try to be as tough as we can, be a good, you know, good offensive rebounding team, good, you know, my teams have never been a good defensive team, but, you know, a tough team, physical, you know, going to play hard. I think those are what we want to build it on. But then, you know, I think a lot of it has to do, we try to have our team be in unbelievable shape, have our guys, you know, be able to get up and down the floor, do what they need to do that, you know, they're not getting exhausted during a game. And then we shoot a lot of threes. So, you know, I think we shot 35 a game this year. So maybe too many at times, but I think, you know, skilled players that have the ability to shoot, pass, you know, we're not going to get the bulking 6'8" centers that maybe other people in our league are getting. And so I think we have to be a little bit more skilled. We have to be a little more, you know, harder to guard in the half court. And so I think, you know, hopefully they get away with that. Okay, these guys are tough. They play hard. And, you know, they're hard to guard. And I you know, that's when we're making, we go on, I always say, I was actually talking about assistant the other day. We look like for about 2 or 3 minutes every game, we look like we might be the best team in America. And then, you know, we have great spells where, you know, we go on a 10-0 run in 3 possessions or 4 possessions or whatever it is. And you're like, oh my gosh, this team's great. And then we might not look like we played basketball for the next 3 minutes. So
the three going in is a beautiful thing, Todd. When the three goes in, it's beautiful.
Oh,
right?
Gosh. Yeah. So, you know, so I think that's where, you know, we want to be is physical, tough, you know, play hard. And, you know, and then once your players get a little bit better, you know, then the wins start happening.
Yeah, for sure. I think that obviously that's style that's attractive to players. They want to get up and down the floor and shoot threes, and that's kind of the direction obviously the game is headed. And it's certainly different from, I'm sure, when you played and definitely when I played, where that was not nearly the emphasis that it is now. And so I think that from a recruiting standpoint, that's got to help the fact that, you know, it's a style that kids want to play. And if you combine that with good talent, with a good style of play, then you're going to, that's going to lead to success. I want to get to one final question with you, Todd, here. And that is, how do you go about in your program, how do you go about building your relationships with your players day in, day out, so that when they're finished, they feel like they have a connection to you personally and to your program? What do you do over the course of their 4-year career to really build those relationships with the kids that you bring in and are part of your program?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, we want them to know that I'm always there for them. I'm not like overly involved in my guys' lives, you know, sometimes with girlfriends, stuff like that. But, you know, they know if they need anything, I'm there for them. I try to treat them as much as I can like a man. Until I always tell them, until they don't need to be treated like that, I need to take over their lives a little bit. But our guys here are real respectable. I've been here, knock on wood, I've been here 3 years. We haven't had an incident with any of our guys getting in trouble. You know, we like anything. I'm not worried on Friday, Saturday night, what's going on. Like, that's just not who our guys are. And that's a good thing. But, you know, I just try to, you know, and want them to, you know, have a great experience while they're here. And, you know, and I always say a good sign is when, you know, when guys are getting married or guys are getting the Hall of Fame later in life, that, you know, they're inviting you back or having you induct them. And, you know, and that's where a lot of our guys, you know, that's what I always think, that, you know, guys had a good experience, but just, you know, being there for them and, you know, being around them. We spend a lot of time together. So knowing what drives them, knowing, you know, how to make them better, knowing, you know, that when they're there, that I'm going to look out for them the best I can. And, you know, and then that their parents know that I'm there for them. And, you know, I tell guys all the time, a lot of what basketball, especially at Division III level or any level, is about attrition. And, you know, how long can you outlast your teammates? So, you know, we have guys that come in and maybe are more highly touted, don't work as hard, and they might not play all 4 years. And, you know, then we'll have guys that, you know, aren't as talented, are going to work harder, that end up being good players. And so I think every experience is different with guys. And, you know, but I always think when, you know, whenever your guys graduate and, you know, they're back in town and they text you or call you and say, hey, coach, you want to go grab a beer or you want to go grab dinner? You know, I think that's how you can always tell if the relationship was good with the guys when they were there.
Yeah, there's nothing better than that. I think any coach will echo that sentiment, that when you get those phone calls 10 years down the road and a kid invites you to their wedding or, like you said, and wants you to give their Hall of Fame speech for them, I think there's nothing more gratifying, there's nothing more satisfying than knowing that you built that kind of relationship. And I know the other thing that I always find interesting is when you'll get a kid that you haven't talked to in, you know, 5 years, or they call you back after some monumental life event and they share something that you said that you have absolutely no recollection of ever having said, but they just tell you how much that particular statement could have been something you said in practice, could have been just something you said in a meeting, could have been something you said during a one-on-one conversation that they remember, that has a profound impact on them, but that you yourself as the coach have no memory of. And I know I have things that go both ways with that. I have things that I remember as a player that coaches said to me that I'm sure if I went back to those coaches, they would have no idea that the things that they said, what impact that those things had on my life. And then conversely, I'm sure there are lots of kids out there that remember things that I said that if they brought those quotes to me, I'd be like, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't remember that particular thing. But that's the kind of impact that we can have as coaches. And I think that's something that we always need to keep in mind, is that huge impact that we have on young people. And it's great that we can do it through the game of basketball that we love, for sure.
Oh yeah, I remember I ran into a guy and he was telling some story about, I know exactly what had happened after he told me, but like when he first started talking, I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he's like, to this day, we still all text about it out of randomly. And I'm like, oh, I know what you're talking about. Know, it wasn't anything crazy. I was like, you know, and it's just like something I said, and they still like go nuts about it. And, you know, I think that's a lot of where guys are, you know, with stuff like that.
There's nothing better than those little stories that are kind of those insider stories that only people who are a part of that special team or that locker room moment can feel. And that's something that people who aren't involved in team sports, I don't think could ever understand, the special quality of being on a team or being in the locker room. There's nothing that will replace that. Todd, we can't thank you enough for spending some time with us tonight. Before we get out of here, I want you to share out how people can get in touch with you Share your contact information. And then if there's anything that we didn't hit on tonight that you want to leave as your parting shot, you can go ahead and do that as well.
Yeah, my cell phone, if you want that, is, I don't even know what my Twitter is. I think it's OOMAC42 is the same as this. I don't know why that is, but I've had Twitter for a long time. That's what that tells you. I think that's what it is. My cell phone, I'll put it on here, 607-435-4807. My email, trm26@case.edu, case.edu. You know, so those are ways to get a hold of me. If anyone's ever in Tremont, wants to grab a beer or anything like that in Ohio, let me know. It sounds like the fireworks are firing up. I didn't know if there was gunshots or fireworks. I think they're fireworks.
Let's hope so. Let's hope they're fireworks tonight.
Yeah,
let's hope,
you never. Hope sometimes so. You never know around here. Yeah, great areas, but you know, yeah. So if anyone's ever in Cleveland or whatever, I have a boat in the lake, so shoot me a text or give me a call, and you're more than welcome to come on down and hang out with me for a day. So I enjoy the Cleveland weather in the summer, put it that way. So absolutely. But you know, thanks for having me on, and you know, anyone that needs to get a hold of me, if you guys have need to get a hold of me, feel free to call or text anytime.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll put all your contact information in the show notes so that people can grab that if they want to get and reach out to you and talk after listening to you on the show. And we can't thank you again enough for spending some time with us tonight. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our Academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.